Today is Thursday, August 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The search for those missing from Tuesday's blast in Lebanon continues.
Well, it's a very difficult situation now in Lebanon, and the numbers are slowly going up.
Plus,
75 years ago, Hiroshima and Nagasaki experienced the agony and the devastation caused by atomic blast.
And the latest on the COVID-19 pandemic. We'll have those stories and more coming up next. Lebanon's president has called for a two-week state of emergency and declared a period of mourning after at least one huge explosion rocked the capital of Beirut, killing more than 130 people and injuring thousands. George Eade is a reporter in Beirut, and I spoke to him earlier today via WhatsApp to get the latest.
Well, it's a very difficult situation now in Lebanon, and the numbers are slowly going up. So we are today, as the health minister of Lebanon, Hamad Hassan, said, we have a death toll that reached 137. Approximately 5,000 are wounded. Also, the minister pointed out that contacts were going on with Arab and European countries to help secure medical aid. We already have a lot of countries that intervened. Greece was one of them, Cyprus as well. Others have vowed to help. The French president has arrived to Lebanon on the Thursday, and he's actually giving his support to Lebanon. What is interesting about this blast is that we had a report today in media outlets in Lebanon informing the public that the Prime Minister Hassan Diab was informed about the chemicals on the 20th of July 2020. The report he received was from the state security forces, where they warned him against the storage of nitrate ammonium. And we are talking about 2,750 tons, and this led to the blast. Also, the President of the Republic, Michel Aoun, was also informed about the chemicals by the end of 2019. This gives another turn to our story. Some countries have already opened an investigation, like France, who lost more than five of her citizens in Beirut. We are looking at a very, very high death toll. Until now, we have more than 100 missing.
You mentioned about the reports of the chemicals being stored in some time ago. What's been the reaction in Beirut and Lebanon, knowing that the government had received these reports about the dangers of these chemicals?
Total shock. Some news outlets such as MTV Lebanon has lashed out the president and those in power last night in its news bulletin, talking about a very big scandal and asking that someone should be held accountable. This has left 300,000 people homeless on the streets. Repairs are a bit of a mess because the country is already suffering from an economical crisis, so people aren't able to take their money out of the banks to even fix their homes. We are in short of medical supplies. Already we're struggling with COVID-19 in Lebanon since 3-4 months. So this is one of the main issues that this country is facing now, and to add to it an explosion of this titanic effect.
You mentioned about the economic and health crisis already facing Lebanon because of the pandemic. You also mentioned some 5,000 people being injured by the latest report. What effect is that having on the healthcare infrastructure there? I know some countries have pledged aid and are providing field hospitals, but is that enough?
Jordan and Iraq are both offering field hospitals, Turkey as well, but this is not what the country needs. That's what an official has stated yesterday, and they're asking for medical supplies. You have to know that in the capital, Beirut, the capital was hit, so main hospitals are usually located in the capital. Three of these main hospitals have been badly and severely damaged, so they were unable to attend to their patients. So patients were removed. Electricity was absent from the buildings, and patients were moved to rural hospitals. And this in itself is a very, very big hassle for the people today, because even though the medical equipment is here, we're facing a big problem with two or three main hospitals being almost shut down because of the blast.
What can you tell us more about the efforts to go through the rubble and the areas of destruction to find those who are missing?
As we speak, the French, the Germans, and the Greeks, and among others, are among the teams that are searching under the rubble, pulling out people who were dead because of this blast. Internal security forces in Lebanon are also running their own investigation. It is still unclear towards where is the investigation heading. We still don't have arrests, for example. But I think that the rescue efforts will go on at least for 3-4 days, because we're talking about the capital. Houses there are more than 300,000, and usually these are old neighborhoods with very fragile houses and old houses. So some people still lie under the rubbles, undiscovered until now.
One last question. Some of the video and pictures that were coming out of Beirut showed a grain storage facility that was really just blown apart, and there was some concern about what effect that would have on providing grain to the citizens there, and it could possibly run out by the end of the month. What can you share with us about that?
Well, let me tell you that the experts are predicting devastating economic consequences after Beirut's blast. It is being estimated that billions of dollars, the reconstruction will cost billions of dollars, I mean the capital, but the silos themselves have been hit badly, and not to say that we can say that they're lost. So this is a very big problem. However, until now, official sources state that we have enough grains stored in different places and through different and private entities that would last us a bit less than a month. Until then, we will have a big problem, a problem on our hands, and efforts are being made to find a solution. That means starvation. Already we're in shortage of some products. Our main port is unable to function properly, so we do not have a lot of option.
That was reporter George E. speaking to me from Beirut, Lebanon. The long-running dispute between Egypt and Ethiopia over the Nile River Dam remains unresolved. And on the streets of Cairo, Ethiopian residents say racism and hostility against them are intensifying. This comes as rains in Ethiopia are filling the reservoir of the controversial dam upstream, a development Egyptians see as an existential threat. VOA's Heather Murdoch has more from Istanbul with Hamada El Rassam in Cairo.
300 million people depend on the Nile River to survive, and in Egypt, 95% of the population lives along the river. Upstream from Egypt is Ethiopia. Ethiopia has built a nearly $5 billion dam project it says will provide electricity to 65 million people and help lift the country out of poverty. Egypt sees the possibility of lower water levels as a threat to its very existence. Ethiopian refugees in Egypt are caught in the middle. Taher Omar Huru is an Ethiopian refugee and a local refugee community leader in Cairo. He says there has been a rise in hate speech, harassment, and violence against Ethiopians or people perceived to be Ethiopian, raising fear among refugees. Egypt hosts more than 100,000 refugees from sub-Saharan Africa, and many of them say they are the target of open hostility on the streets because of the dispute over the dam. With increased racism, even simple things are more difficult, say refugee advocates. This is Noor Khalil, a legal consultant for refugees and migrants. He says black refugees are commonly discriminated against because locals assume they are Ethiopian and they want to block the water. Online, Egyptians and Ethiopians taunt each other. Ethiopian TikTok users suggest Egypt will be completely cut off from the Nile. Egyptian users retort with posts about Egypt's considerable military prowess.
دي بتبقى عامل مستفز كبير جدا لينا لانه انت بتتكلم في انه الناس بتقول.
This is Michael Sabet, a Cairo resident. He says the online bickering is fueling growing tensions on the ground. Egypt's critics say the country has long used its power to bully its neighbors and control the Nile. Critics of Ethiopia say that without a legally binding agreement regulating the use of the dam, the country could devastate its downstream neighbors and violate international law. Egypt, Ethiopia, and Sudan are still in talks, trying to negotiate a deal as the reservoir is slowly being filled up. But sub-Saharan refugees in Egypt say the anger on the ground is misdirected against them. They say, if Egyptians go thirsty, we will go thirsty too. Heather Murdoch, VOA News in Istanbul, with Hamada El-Rassam in Cairo.
And coming up later in the program,
75 years ago, Hiroshima and Nagasaki experienced the agony and the devastation caused by atomic blast. To this day, what happened in Japan continues to haunt humanity and raises a challenging question. Can we ever escape the destructive instinct that led to these horrific bombings?
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Does Earth have a twin somewhere out in the cosmos? Some of the exoplanets discovered so far include those that are like Earth and are orbiting its star within the so-called habitable zone, where conditions could be ideal for life as we know it to exist. But most of the stars that host these Earth-like planets are red dwarfs, which are much cooler than stars like our Sun. Scientists, led by Germany's Max Planck Institute for Solar System Research, may have discovered a host star planet system that closely parallels our own Sun-Earth system. The host star of this system is Sun-like, with its surface temperature only 300 degrees Celsius cooler. The exoplanet is thought to be slightly less than double the size of Earth and is in its star's habitable zone. The scientists did note that their findings could be in error, so further observation and study is needed. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. With nearly 19 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 around the world, the World Health Organization's Director General, Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, painted a somber picture.
The events of the last 7 months are a tragic reminder of the insecurity and instability that diseases can cause. The COVID-19 pandemic has changed our world. It has stress-tested our political, economic, cultural, and social infrastructure and found us wanting. It has pushed the limits of health systems, both weak and strong, leaving no country untouched. It has humbled us all. The world spends billions every year preparing for potential terrorist attacks, but we have learned lessons the hard way that unless we invest in pandemic preparedness and the climate crisis, we leave ourselves open to enormous harm.
He said that since the WHO was created over 7 decades ago, it has worked to galvanize collective international public health action to build a healthier and safer future for humanity. And for the first time, Facebook has deleted one of U.S. President Donald Trump's posts, saying that he violated its policy against spreading misinformation about the coronavirus. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani takes it from here.
The president's post featured a link to a Fox and Friends video in which he talked about kids and the virus.
The fact is that they are virtually immune from this problem.
Several studies suggest but do not prove that kids are less likely to become infected than adults, which is different from being virtually immune. Facebook in the past has labeled the president's posts as containing misinformation but had never removed one entirely. A Trump tweet with the same video was still up on Twitter Twitter yesterday afternoon. Even though Twitter's been faster than Facebook recently in flagging posts from the president that violate its policies. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
Johnson & Johnson is the latest drug company to announce that it will supply a potential COVID-19 vaccine to the United States in exchange for $1 billion as another vaccine maker, Moderna, comes under fire for pricing its potential drug too high. Reuters' Conway G. Gittins has that story.
The race to come up with a coronavirus vaccine is fast and furious. Johnson & Johnson, the latest company to announce Wednesday that the U.S. government has pledged to buy 100 million doses of its still-in-development vaccine for over $1 billion. J&J's potential vaccine is currently in the midst of early-stage clinical trials using healthy volunteers in the United States and Belgium. But Novavax is further along in the process. The company on Tuesday said it could start a high-stakes Phase 3 trial involving many more participants as soon as next month. The decision comes after Novavax said its vaccine candidate produced higher levels of COVID-19 antibodies in healthy human volunteers after two doses compared to the antibody levels found in recovered COVID-19 patients. Novavax President of Research and Development, Dr. Gregory Glenn, explains the early test results.
We give them two shots. After the second shot, we take some blood. We mix that blood that has the antibodies in it that could be protective, and we mix that with virus, and we see if the virus will grow. And you actually dilute that out, and that can actually give you a measurement of how much antibody you have. And so the striking thing about our vaccine is that it gives you a lot of antibody. It should be very protective.
The vaccine candidate is grown in insect cells, similar to how the flu vaccine is produced. Novavax then adds a so-called booster or adjuvant, a substance that boosts the immune response to help the body build a robust defense against the virus. Novavax told Reuters the results were so promising, it could seek regulatory approval before this year is out. Shares surged 17% on the news. But investors had a different reaction to Moderna, which has one of the few potential vaccines already in final stage clinical trials. It came under fire Wednesday for pricing. It will charge between $64 and $74 per person for a two-dose regimen. Compare that to a deal between Pfizer and the U.S., which works out to roughly $40 per person. Moderna thinks it can have a drug ready for market by the end of the year. Canada announced Wednesday that it will buy millions of doses from Moderna and from Pfizer as well. No financial terms were disclosed for either of those deals. There are no approved vaccines yet to treat or prevent COVID-19, but at least 19 vaccines are being tested in humans around the world.
That's Conway G. Gittins, a reporter for Reuters News. In the U.S., thousands of new coronavirus cases are being reported each day in the hard-hit so-called southern states. But Arizona's governor received special praise for his handling of the pandemic. The AP's Jackie Quinn reports.
The latest tally in Arizona shows 87 new deaths reported Wednesday and nearly 1,700 new infections. But the state seems to be turning a corner, with the seven-day averages going lower. President Trump hosted Arizona Governor Doug Ducey, a Republican quick to reopen his state, calling Ducey a model for the rest of the country.
He was hit very hard, and he hit back even harder.
Florida surpassed 500,000 infections Wednesday with 225 new deaths. California's had more than 527,000 infections and a nationwide tally of 4.8 million with more than 157,000 deaths, according to Johns Hopkins University. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Bells tolled in Hiroshima, Japan for the 75th anniversary of the world's first atomic bombing. With ceremonies downsized due to the coronavirus, the city's mayor urged nations to reject selfish nationalism and to unite to fight all threats. Lucina Zerbo is the head of the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty Organization. He said, with what has happened in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, still haunts humanity to this day.
75 years ago, Hiroshima and Nagasaki experienced the agony and the devastation caused by atomic blast. To this day, what happened in Japan continues to haunt humanity and raises a challenging question. Can we ever escape the destructive instinct that led to these horrific bombings.
At 8:15 in the morning on August 6, 1945 local time, United States B-29 warplane the Enola Gay dropped a bomb nicknamed Little Boy and obliterated much of Hiroshima. An estimated 80,000 people died that day, and thousands more died later from injuries and radiation-related illnesses. The bombing of Hiroshima was followed by the bombing of Nagasaki on August 9th, instantly killing more than 75,000 people. Japan surrendered 6 days later, ending World War II. Police and protesters in the northwestern city of Portland, Oregon, have clashed for the second night in a row, and the city's police chief says the ongoing violence is hurting the city's image. Clashes outside a U.S. courthouse in Portland largely stopped since Democratic Governor Kate Brown reached a deal that called for the drawdown of federal agents sent by the Trump administration. But the clashes reemerged kilometers from the courthouse amid protester demands to defund the Portland police. Late Wednesday, Portland police declared a riot and people were ordered to disperse. Unruly protests have roiled Portland nightly for 69 days since George Floyd was killed in police custody. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, or any other device to voanews.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'm at SMillerVOA, where I post updates to the show and videos related to today's content. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Corruption and repression are hallmarks of the regime of Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega. Ortega and his circle continue to undermine efforts to return Nicaragua to democratic rule and have enabled the uncontrolled spread of COVID-19. In recent remarks to the Organization of American States Permanent Council, U.S. Ambassador Carlos Trujillo said that Nicaraguans are facing a new threat in the form of COVID-19 and the lack of a responsible government response, which has almost certainly caused tragic and unnecessary loss of life. This is a government that cares nothing for its people, a government that cares only to remain in power indefinitely. At the same time, noted Ambassador Trujillo, the Ortega government continues to silence independent journalism and civil society that seek to tell the truth and fire healthcare workers who advocate stronger measures to protect against the pandemic. In response to the corrupt dealings of the Ortega regime, the United States announced additional sanctions July 17th on Juan Carlos Ortega Murillo, Jose Jorge Mojica Mejia, Difuso Comunicaciones S.A. and Mundo Digital S.A. These actions, pursuant to Executive Order 13851, freeze the U.S. assets of the two designees and two entities and prohibit U.S. persons from conducting transactions with them. These individuals and entities have misappropriated public funds and expropriated private assets for personal gain or political purposes and engaged in corruption related to government contracts or bribery. Ortega Murillo, the son of President Daniel Ortega and Vice President and First Lady Rosario Murillo, manages media company Difuso Comunicaciones S.A., which he has used to stifle independent voices, spread regime propaganda, and defend the Ortega's violence and repression. Mojica and Mundo Digital S.A. have long benefited from corrupt arrangements with the regime, both to enrich themselves and enable regime associates to avoid sanctions. The United States, said Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in a written statement, will continue to take the necessary steps to support the Nicaraguan people and pressure the Ortega regime to stop repressing the Nicaraguan people, guarantee basic civil liberties, and allow the conditions for free and fair elections to work toward the restoration of democracy in Nicaragua.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.